there and welcome to Money for Change, the podcast where we dive into the sustainability transitions that are reshaping our world. If you're curious about where the planet and its inhabitants are headed, you're in the right place. In each episode, we'll chat with experts from Triodos Bank whose work relates to these changes, tackling topics like the energy transition, circular economy, and what sustainable finance really means. Our goal? To bring you the latest insights on what it takes to create a more balanced and just world. But we don't just want you to listen, we want you to be part of the conversation. Head over to our website via the link in the show notes and share your thoughts, ask questions, and leave us a voice message. Welcome to Money for Change. Let's get started. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Money for Change, the second episode. My name is Sanne van Keulen, one of the three regular hosts of this show next to Emma and Ernst. And today, of course, we're going to talk about a topic with global implications. The recent election victory of Donald Trump in the United States. We will go through the expected implications for the global economy, then zooming into the EU specifically. And of course, we will have a closer look at the consequences we expect for the social and sustainability transitions. We will also touch upon the way forward, what is needed to counter negative effects. Before we wrap up, of course, we will have our recurring item of hopeful and dreadful news. And joining us today, as always, are Triodos Bank Chief Economist Hans Steegman. Welcome, Hans.
Thank you.
And we have a special guest today, and that is Yuri de Wilde. Yuri is an economic researcher in the Impact and Economics team at Triodos Bank, and in that role, he's responsible for the research on advanced economies, which involves forecasting economic growth, inflation, and interest rates. He also closely follows financial markets. Welcome, Yuri.
Thanks for having me.
First thing I really want to know is last week we had the election night. Did you follow it, and what did your night look like, Yuri?
What did my night look like? Well, actually, I had a late night indoor soccer match because I'm still participating in a students league, which is not very...
You're not a student anymore.
I'm not a student anymore, so that's not very helpful because it means we have to play football late at night. And I recently had a daughter of only 8 months old now. So when you come at home, you really have to go to bed as soon as possible. Otherwise, it's not possible. So I came home, but then when you play a football match late at night, of course, you're full of adrenaline still. So I couldn't sleep. So I was watching on my phone in bed, I was watching the developments. And then still I had some good hope for Harris win, actually.
How about you, Hans?
When you finally went to sleep, I was already getting up. I think it was 5:30 because I had to travel very early, first to the office and then to London. So I was following the news and got depressed every second. I was longer looking at my phone. I was in the train first. Then I missed a part because I had to do a presentation and I was looking again. So that was in the middle of the afternoon already. Then it was quite clear that Trump would
The win. Expected neck-and-neck race was not really happening, right?
It was rather soon clear that that Trump would win, only the landslide, which it is, is devastating. Well, we come back to that later. So I was quite depressed, and then I had to travel to London. And I had a lot of press corps. That was Thursday, and it was only about Trump.
All over, every conversation.
Every podcast. So we do also one.
So we're going to do a bit of a more thorough analysis, and we'll start with you, Yuri, to talk about the implications of the US elections. Since you're an economist, can you describe a little bit, like, what do we see happening? One of the first things we saw was the stock market actually going up. What does that mean?
True, yes, we saw stock markets going up. We already saw that a bit before the election results came in. So there was already anticipation that Trump would win, which by itself is, by the way, interesting because the polls showed a very close neck-on-neck race. But financial markets and betting odds were right. They predicted a Trump win. Basically, what it means is that people expect that it will be beneficial for corporate profits. That's what it shows. And then more specifically, and that's what I find worrying, short-term profits.
Yes, right? I wanted to add.
It is. we saw stock markets on average rising rather aggressively, but we also saw that certain sectors that are beneficial for the sustainable transition, and that they were falling, right? So in renewable energy stocks, they really got a hit. Mm-hmm. So you really see people preparing for a move back to the old brown economy.
And why is the US president and administration so dominant for the global economy and the stock markets?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I guess that's already related to your first question, right? That you asked, why do stock markets go up? But it's also because the largest stock markets are in the US, and also the largest bond markets.
By far the largest.
By far, yeah. By far, it's not close to the second on the list. So that means that all the movements in the stock market and the bond markets also are decisive for movements elsewhere. And next to that, a couple of other factors are important. For one, that the US dollar is the global reserve currency, right? So that means that everything related to US fiscal policy that affects the dollar, that has an effect on the dollar exchange rate, and that has an effect on reserves at other countries, also dollar-denominated debts of emerging markets.
Whoa. Dollar-denominated debts.
Maybe
what is that, Yuri?
I guess we can leave that behind. It's most important that the dollar is the main currency that is used in the world, right?
Yeah, but I think the importance here is if you see the election of Trump, and on the one hand, like Yuri said, the dollar and America financial markets are dominant in the global economy. So they determine a lot.
Uh-huh.
And this is because the USA is not only an economy, but also has had at least the power, or still has the power, to determine a lot of policies all over the world. And if you compare that to the agenda of Trump, which is isolationism, so going back, putting down borders and say America first, we all know it, this a little bit contradicts their own interest in their financial markets, which means you should be and stay a global player. And now you say, yeah, I'm a global player as long as I like it.
Yeah.
And for the rest, it's all for us.
Yeah. Let's zoom in into one of these measures that Trump already announced, which is about import tariffs, right? Mm-hmm. To protect the US industry.
Yeah.
How can you explain, like, how does that work and what are the consequences? And is that even possible due to, you know, World Trade Organization agreements that have been made?
Yeah.
Can you elaborate?
Well, it's very well possible because he already implemented tariffs in his previous presidential term, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and basically what it is, an import tariff is a tax on imports coming from another country. Imports services or goods. And what it intends to do is make prices of foreign products higher so that people will substitute to domestic products. And even better, and that's what Trump also intends to do, is that maybe foreign producers will move their factories into the US so that there's also more production in the US, more jobs.
Yeah.
That's Trump's idea. And the funny thing is actually that all the research points in the other direction, right? So that import tariffs will reduce a country's economic growth and will reduce...
In the long term, you mean?
In the long term.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, in the long term. And it's also, of course, an interplay between the different policies that Trump wants to implement. That also relates to the stock market because tariffs are only one part of the plan, and there's also other parts, but maybe we can first talk about tariffs.
Well, this is interesting, a bit of a paradox, it seems. So on the one hand, for your economy to thrive, you want this open global trade, and on the other hand, companies are apparently in the US very happy with the election of Trump, or part of the, some of the sectors are happy with it.
That relates to the second part of his policy plan, that is tax cuts for corporates.
Tax cuts and deregulation, which helps part of the sectors. But there are a lot of contradictions in Trump's plans.
Explain. And tell me.
I think import tariffs are one of the biggest ones. And like Yuri also explained, economists, they don't know everything and they don't agree on everything, but they do agree on what is beneficial in terms of trade.
Yeah.
So open trades gives the opportunity that everybody specializes in what he or she is good at. So it's not a zero-sum game. What Trump, I think he sees the world all the time as a zero-sum game. Mm. I win, you lose, which is not the case by international trade. We can both win. And he doesn't get it. So he thinks we're playing the lose-win game. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows this is a lose-lose game. He sells it to corporate America by putting extra measures in, like deregulation, like cutting corporate taxes. Also, of course, to help the lobbyists that supported him. And that's the kind of putting an agenda through that is more like a business agenda. So he sees this just America is just a company and we're going to fix it. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be more efficient. We have deals with our partners and we say to Trump, to Putin, you should stop the war. And then, this is not politics. And I think to understand economically what Trump is proposing, you need to think him as a businessman and not as economic policy like, we are used to have.
Yeah. And that's also maybe why we have to be very careful what to actually expect, because most of his announcements are part of a negotiation process, right?
Yeah.
So he has now said that he will impose a universal import tax, 60% on Chinese products and 10 to 20% elsewhere. But I personally do not expect that at least the universal part will follow through.
Yeah, and I was thinking, because there are a lot of Tesla factories in China. So I think Elon Musk won't agree.
No, definitely not. No.
So this is like his opening offer for negotiations rather than. Do you also see like a big topic in the US elections was the price of, groceries, the price of living? Due to these measures that Trump will take, will inflation rise or decrease? What is the expectation there?
Yeah, so that's also very contradictory. So you expect inflation to actually rise because you tax imports, right? So prices will rise. But part of the research shows that people voted for Trump because prices were too high. So that is very strange. So that, but in some way, it just manages to get that message through that it will support the domestic industry.
Yeah, but economically, you say the research shows this is not how it works.
This is not how it works, yes.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Let's dive a little bit more into our continent, the EU, because of course the election of Trump and the measures that he will take will also have an impact on EU countries and our economy. What sectors or companies will be most impacted by increased protectionist measures?
So last time when Trump implemented tariffs, he implemented tariffs on steel and aluminum coming from the EU. This time he has said, I will put measures on the most important products coming from the EU. And the EU mostly exports cars, so German cars, you have that.
Yeah.
You have the pharmaceuticals.
You also need steel for that, by the way.
You need steel for that, yeah. So the entire automotive industry, maybe also some aerospace, aircraft producers, also the pharmaceutical and chemical industry, which is very large in the EU. So they export a lot of medicines to the US. Mm-hmm. So these are potential sectors, the most important, maybe some high-end products like clothes or stuff from Louis Vuitton or that's also
fashion.
Something fashion, yeah. But old the most
couture.
Important will be haute couture. The culture we export to the US.
Yeah.
No, but I think it will mostly be, just to be plain, it will be German cars, right? Which will be very detrimental for the EU because the German economy is already in a very weak episode.
And this is mainly, do you think the influence of Elon Musk is, has been dominant in?
Well, it's just like Hans is saying, it is a zero, Trump sees it as a zero sum game. So the EU is exporting more to the US than it is importing. So he just wants to have a positive trade balance with the EU and not a negative one like they have right now.
Yeah.
And I think also what's very important is Trump's energy intentions and what that means for the
Yeah, I think apart from the direct trade flow effect, so from the input tariffs, I think another important part, what will happen with Ukraine? So what will happen definitely. With the military supports? What will happen to NATO? What will happen to all that? So the more the geopolitical part, which we tend to forget, but Europe is very vulnerable at the moment, given that we have relied since World War II on the support of the US. And if that is no longer there, it does not... Well, then I have a destination for the car manufacturers in Germany. They have to make other cars, and these are tanks.
They already started with that a little bit. Right?
That's the prospect we have, right? So it's not only what can we export or not export anymore to the US, but what do we have to do ourselves to protect ourselves from Russia, to be relevant in the world? So how are we going to organize it? And I think that's one of the biggest questions we have.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I just also want to go into a report, I think launched in September, right? Led by Mario Draghi. I don't know how to pronounce this correctly in Italian. Do you know?
Draghi.
Sounds
good. I don't know.
Anyways, former ECB president about the future of European competitiveness, which was, pre-Trump elections.
Yeah.
So in the light of what happened now in the US, how do you look at that report and the contents of the report, which was very, I think very strict and urgent recommendations?
Yeah, I guess what you can say is that the election win of Trump amplifies the structural issues that we already are seeing in the EU that were highlighted by the Draghi report. Right?
What issues?
So we have... In contrast to the US, we don't have a large capital market here, one big capital pool where we can all raise money. That's one of the reasons why Draghi says there's a lack of innovation and a lack of very large companies. I guess it also relates to security issues, right? So the US is now really focusing on implementing a renewed fossil fuel industry. And at the same time, we were very dependent on Russian gas, and now we have to find new ways. And if the US is really focusing on itself, then it's really difficult for us to stay competitive.
Most economists know Mario Draghi as the one who said whatever it takes in the euro crisis in 2012, July 2012, and afterwards markets calmed. I think this report is also again whatever it takes if you want to have a European future. And I think, like Yuri said, it's about energy security. We have a competitive disadvantage as Europe because we have expensive energy. We don't have energy supplies ourselves. Also resources.
Mm-hmm.
So, we don't have a lot of resources ourselves. So minerals, metals. So we have to import a lot of stuff. Security. And the last one, innovation, because it has become, especially also after the COVID crisis, more and more clear that Europe, although it's the old great continent with a lot of culture, we miss out on productivity growth. And you need, and productivity growth is nothing else than doing things smarter.
Mm-hmm.
And doing things smarter with less resources is also a way to become richer, to have more well-being in the end. And a big part of the report was about that, about innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And what I a little bit miss is it was kind of looking at the US and can we copy that? I think also given the results of this election, we should not copy it.
No.
There's also some pages on there, Europe is different and we have a bigger welfare state and we need to capture that. So I think the task in the coming years is what is the European style of innovation and security, etc.
And just Hans, you're, I think I can say, a well-known post-growth thinker. If the European economy shrinks as a result of what's happening in the US, for instance, the effects on the car industry, is that a bad thing? Because, eventually we need to decouple.
Yeah, this is a very relevant question, Shana. There's also a mix-up of things. That people say, yeah, but if it shrinks, it's okay, and you're an advocate of degrowth, so this is what you want. No, this is not exactly what I want. Degrowth is, for me, one of the taglines is degrowth by design and not by disaster. So this is disaster.
This would be disaster, yeah.
You want to have ways, and that's also why I said a European style of economy. So you can do a lot of things like sufficiency policy. So how can we reduce demand and still have a happy life? So it also means redistribution. So having an economy, having a society that can do with less, so that can degrow, but then you have to implement it in a broader policy agenda. And that's not to say, oh yeah, we can do with less and that's okay. No, that will never be okay.
Would this be an opportunity to advance the degrowth agenda, you think?
It will also be a challenge, because what we have here is that defense spending will be extra spending and will be a substitution, for instance, for basic needs. Yeah. So if you look at the budget of a government, so instead of paying for social security, you do now have to pay for defense spending. So that will be a challenge. I think it should be an opportunity, because we don't have the luxury to choose. We need to be more efficient on resources, on energy, because we don't want to rely on the rest of the world. So we have to think about reducing demand for energy and resources in such a way that we still can cover our basic needs and make everybody as well off as possible. Because don't forget that Europe is still the continent with the most happiest countries, and we are still one of the most richest continents.
Mm.
And that is also dangerous, because if you have a lot, you also have a lot to lose.
A lot to lose, yeah. And looking at, of course, Triodos Bank works on a lot of big transitions, like the energy transition, but also well-being transition, I should say, social transition. So what are the impacts of, the fact that Trump will be now in the White House on these transitions, and what will we feel in Europe?
So
it's a big question.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Maybe I will focus on maybe the energy transition, and then I will hand over to Hans for the other
four transitions.
but I think it's very tricky, because in the US, on the one hand, you have Trump, who has said drill, baby, drill. So he wants to extract as much
more oil gas, and gas as
possible.
Shale gas.
But on the other hand, you have that former Inflation Reduction Act, which was basically a climate subsidy policy implemented by Biden. Mm. But he called it a little bit differently. Question.
Framing.
Smart
Biden,
framing,
right?
Yeah. It's very, very smart framing. Maybe we can learn from that in the EU. That means that question is, what will Trump do with that part of the policy? Will he leave that in place?
Mm-hmm.
I heard yesterday that most of the subsidies end up at states where actually Republicans have a majority.
Yeah.
So that will make it difficult for Trump to let go of these subsidies. So maybe it will be that at one end he will drill as much as possible while also subsidizing the green energy companies. So that is a very difficult proposition for the EU to compete, right?
Yeah.
Because probably these renewable companies, they need also some energy, fossil fuels to produce. So and usually you want to be where the fossil fuel is as cheap as possible. So that's something that's very tricky. I guess we just have to hold on to our view in the EU. And maybe we really have to specialize, as we were saying, on this. And if they do both, maybe that's difficult to do both very well.
And Hans, if you look at more the social implications, I think we can see, already for some time a widening gap between rich and poor. What will that look like in the US, but also outside?
In the US, it's hard to be optimistic, I think. Also given the policy package that Trump has, there is not so much for the people. Migration, of course, but also healthcare, etc. It will not be easier for a lot of people. But I think in Europe, in a milder way, we have the kind of same situation if you look from a European level.
Mm-hmm.
Also in different countries, we see populist movements. Also in Germany, we get new elections where also probably the right wing will win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in many cases, it's not that good news for well-being and for societal well-being. And if you look from an inequality perspective.
Mm.
And I was trying to explain that for myself. How can it be that people vote for these parties while they're also worried about their purchasing power, etc.?
Yeah.
And I have the idea that this is still mostly the middle class, so not the people on the at the bottom, who feel they have a lot to lose and they are just simply afraid of what will happen. And if you're afraid, you're going to be more conservative, and then you vote for someone who, in very simple language, explains you what will happen.
Yeah, and of course, there is a lot of empty promises there, right?
Absolutely.
And rhetorics that people buy. Just to quickly, you know, you both are very smart, of course, so you can give us a quick solution. No, I'm kidding. So what is the thing?
We're not smart.
You're super smart.
Okay.
Now, what is the thing that you think the EU should do in response to these measures that Trump will take? So what is the wise response, if you could advise the EU Commission right now? What should they do?
I would advise at least to try to negotiate. Right, because probably
that's what he expects.
That's what he expects, but that's also what will work to some extent. The European Commission, as said, has already come up with a counter plan of attack, right, for these proposed tariffs. And last time they were very kind to Trump, so they didn't implement huge tariffs as a retaliation. Mm. And probably now they have learned their lesson. And negotiations will be hard, but that's what also what probably will get the most out of Trump. If you try to be very soft, that doesn't work, at least when negotiating. And at the same time, you just have to continue, of course, with your own.
So that would mean that the EU would also impose import tariffs from, you know, for products outside the EU.
And well, I guess if you negotiate, then maybe that will not happen. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
You try to soften the effects by negotiating.
Yeah.
And you don't want to end up in a trade war that you're going to retaliate higher tariffs from the US, also to put in higher tariffs, and then you have a trade war, and then
The goal is to not do that, but to achieve that, probably you have to threaten that you will do it.
Yeah.
And
what in addition to that, what I would advise, and I think they all know it, there's only one way for Europe to remain relevant in this geopolitical new situation, and that's more act as one on foreign policies, on defense spending, etc., to be more efficient. But I also see a lot of difficulties to get there, given a lot of populist resentment also in Europe, but I think that's the only chance we have there.
So the urgency for creating that oneness is, in any case, has increased. Well, thank you very much for this conversation. Looking at the time, we want to move into the hopeful and dreadful news for this week. Hans, over to you.
Yes, I was really trying to look for hopeful news because we talked about, I knew this was going to happen.
Been a lot,
However,
yeah.
I did not find one. So I have a news I think a lot of people will know, but today starts, or this week is the COP 29,
the climate negotiations in
Baku. And last week in the newspaper, there was the news that the global temperature rise is expected to hit an average of 1.55 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. We agreed in Paris that it shouldn't be no more than 1.5. So you can at least say that that did not go quite okay, and still people are talking about it should not be no more than 1.5, and the reality
is... But we already reached it.
We are there.
Yeah.
And that's to become even more dreadful if we look at how we are now linked to Trump, busy with our climate policies worldwide. It's very hard to be positive.
Yes.
And maybe on Trump, we did not discuss it before, but one of the first things he wants to do is to retreat from the Paris Agreement. And that will mean that there are only a few other countries. I think it's, only Iran, I think, and Yemen.
Yeah, some few oil states that have larger CO2 emissions per capita.
And the US is the second largest polluter in the world.
Yeah.
So this is... well, this is very bad news. We knew it already, but now that's going to happen, it makes it, and it, also the timing makes it worse, yeah, because you see a lot of countries not sending their presidents anymore.
Yeah, I found it interesting that Biden already didn't go today.
Yeah, but the US also under Biden was not that enthusiastic about it.
No, apparently not. No.
Yeah, but we'll forgive you for the dreadful news, because last week it was really hard to find hopeful news,
yeah,
right?
When I went out Wednesday morning, someone in my street had put an American flag half-mast, which I find very telling.
Anyways, I think we can talk for a couple of more hours, but unfortunately we have to wrap up this episode of Money for Change. So thank you, Yuri, for joining us today. And thank you, Hans, for your contributions. Of course, a big thank you to the listeners for being with us. And I hope you will tune in again next week, because then we will discuss climate finance during the climate negotiations Hans just talked about during COP29 in Baku, Azerbaijan. And we have a special guest who is present at the COP. So I hope to see you then.
That's a wrap for this episode of Money for Change. We hope you found today's conversation insightful and inspiring as we continue to explore the transitions that are shaping our world and our future. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for tuning in to Money for Change.